Welcome to Primo Medico Expert Physicians Talk, health explained in an understandable way. In this podcast channel, we talk about selected medical topics in collaboration with leading medical specialists. The following content comes directly from the respective specialist and is presented by a digitally recorded voice, expertly scrutinized, clearly explained. Primo Medico, health to listen to. The carpometacarpal joint of the thumb, often called the basal joint, is situated precisely where the thumb connects to the rest of your hand. If osteoarthritis has developed in this area, leaving almost no cartilage remaining within the joint, and possibly every single movement causes significant pain, then a prosthetic joint can be surgically implanted. I'm now going to speak about such a saddle joint prosthesis with Dr. Katrin Diener. She is a specialist in orthopedics and chief physician at the Athos Clinic Wiesbaden. Dr. Diener, what are the most common causes for this condition, which is technically known as rhizarthrosis? Are there any risk factors that contribute to this disease?
Yes. So there isn't just one risk factor, but several. And the primary risk factor is being female. Especially women over the age of 40 who are past menopause have a significantly elevated risk of developing such a condition. However, there are also familial clusters, like osteoarthritis families, where patients say their parents also had very severe osteoarthritis. Overweight is also a risk factor for this condition, but so is hypermobility. So there are patients who are extremely lax in their joints. In such cases, this can also occur more frequently. And if, in the region where the joint is located, there was an accident and you sustained a fracture, and then, from that very fracture, wear and tear develops, then this condition is directly accident-related and can also originate in that specific area.
How is a condition such as retarthrosis typically diagnosed? Is it sufficient for someone to simply describe their symptoms, or are more specialized examinations needed?
So, patients generally report experiencing the following symptoms: that when they grasp something, even with the slightest movements, they feel a pain radiating through their thumb. This could be something as simple as holding a single sheet of paper that they intend to turn over. And in a more advanced stage, or in the presence of a more significant inflammation, you'll observe rotational movements, such as unscrewing the cap of a bottle or turning the handle of a window latch. These are precisely the characteristic movements that are commonly cited in such cases. And purely clinically, during the examination, one can already somewhat narrow it down to confirm that it is indeed this specific joint. However, there are possible secondary diagnoses, and that's why an X-ray is usually taken. This means a classic X-ray of the hand in two planes is what's needed to then confirm, yes, you have this osteoarthritis there. Further diagnostic measures are not required.
What non-surgical treatment options are available for this particular medical condition?
Yes, these are the typical treatments for arthrosis. They're essentially always the same for all affected areas. Stay active, keep warm. That's something one can generally do themselves. I often prescribe a night splint, a thumb splint, available pre-made from a medical supply store. I only prescribe it for use at night, so the splint has two effects. For one thing, it provides warmth, and for another, it keeps the thumb securely in what's known as a functional position. This is crucial because, due to the condition, the thumb has a tendency to shift or dislocate within the saddle joint, and the purpose of this splint is to somewhat impede or slow down that unwanted movement. In everyday life, the splint should not be worn, because joints are nourished through movement. And if I permanently restrict the movement with the splint, that's not good for the joint in the long term either. And for the pain itself, the classic pain-reducing treatments for osteoarthritis are then an option. And these include the osteoarthritis tablets that can be taken, such as ibuprofen, Voltaren, or diclofenac. Injections can be given into the joint, usually with a cortisone-containing substance. And then there's also low-dose X-ray therapy. The joint is treated with X-rays, but only a radiation therapist is allowed to perform this. And then there's also RSO, which stands for radiosynoviorthosis, where a nuclear medicine physician injects an isotope directly into the joint. And then, this isotope is intended to treat the joint from the inside out by radiating and targeting the inflammation. However, that is the most radical measure, and for me, it should always be placed at the end of the conservative therapy cascade.
How long can one actually postpone a surgical operation with these specific measures that you have just described to us?
Yes, that's completely individual. There are patients for whom one approach or the other works very well, and for others, it doesn't work at all. We don't know why that is. I also tell patients this up front. We'll try it. It's an established treatment. The measures I've mentioned are also covered by statutory health insurance. However, the effect is individual for each person. And you can't say, if it worked well once, how long that good effect will last. Some are satisfied for years. Others come back after a year and say, it was good for half a year, but now it's bad again. So it really varies a lot.
So what would you say then? In which particular cases is it truly advisable to replace a joint that is, after all, quite small, such as the carpometacarpal joint of the thumb, with an artificial prosthesis?
Yes, when you're so tormented in your daily life that you declare, this is no longer a bearable quality of life for me, and pain medication. I've already tried this, that, and the other conservative treatment option. It didn't provide a comprehensive solution. And what is my option now to deal with the pain and the restricted range of motion? Those are then, of course, the surgical interventions, and in this particular case, the prosthesis that we intend to discuss here.
Is there a specific surgical procedure that's typically used for the implantation of a saddle joint prosthesis?
So, this procedure isn't minimally invasive. It's very much in vogue now to talk about minimally invasive surgery. But the joint itself must be implanted, and it has a specific size. Both joint components must also be prepared so that the prosthesis can be properly fitted. And for that, an incision is required. The incision is typically made on the back of the hand, or more precisely, the dorsal side. Most surgeons opt for this method because this particular approach is also commonly used for other surgical procedures. It's a very familiar route. Surgeons are well acquainted with this path, and that's precisely why it's practiced in this manner. There are very few surgeons who would ever choose the flexor side, but that is truly an extremely rare occurrence. You've got the muscle belly and all sorts of other things there. I find that a little bit difficult to imagine, to be honest. I only know the approach that goes from the top of the hand.
How are we to imagine this, then? So what does this prosthesis look like, and what material is it made of?
Yes, it's assembled from various individual parts, and these are available modularly. That means the individual components are offered in various sizes, which are then picked out for the patient, much like finding the perfect pair of shoes from a store shelf. And there is a shaft that gets inserted into the metacarpal bone, and there is a small socket that is placed into this trapezium bone, and then there is a neck with a ball on top. And all these components come in various sizes, and for example, the neck piece can be straight or in a bent form, so that one can truly assemble this prosthesis in a very modular way, because we have patients ranging from small women to very large men, and accordingly, these options must also be readily available. The prostheses themselves are made of stainless steel, and they are coated with titanium and hydroxylapatite. This specific combination has already proven its effectiveness in other types of prostheses, for instance, in knee and hip replacements.
How will the operation actually be carried out?
Yes, it's usually performed as an outpatient procedure. For the operation, we really need a patient who is completely relaxed and lying still. This means the surgery is typically done under a light general anesthetic. Additionally, the arm itself is often separately numbed a bit more, so that when you eventually wake up from the anesthesia, you won't immediately experience the full postoperative pain. The incision is made above the joint. We go deep into the joint and remove the base of the metacarpal bone, then prepare it with small instruments, milling a small cavity where the stem and the cup are then anchored. The anchoring is press fit, meaning it's hammered in like a dowel into the wall. Cement is not packed in between. And then there are trial prostheses. These are then first fitted, then x-rayed, and it's checked if everything fits well. And then it's also tested, how does the thumb function with this trial implant? And when we are satisfied, yes, that everything is now seated perfectly, the temporary implant is then removed, and the permanent implants are sterilely unpacked and subsequently inserted. And then another x-ray is taken, and the function is tested once more. Does the thumb operate correctly? And then the team steps back. The soft tissues will then be carefully closed again, and a bandage along with a small thumb splint will be applied, which serves to initially fixate the thumb in a specific, functional position. This thumb splint must remain in place for 2 weeks to ensure the thumb has a proper resting position, preventing any further bleeding and allowing the initial scarring process to begin effectively.
You had just mentioned earlier that the arm would also be anesthetized. What kind of pain should one expect to experience after the operation?
So, if the surgeon performs the operation quickly and very precisely, and the anesthesia, as I said, continues to last for a little while after the procedure, then the most critical part will be behind us. So, you don't have to expect that you'll need strong painkillers for days to get through this. It's usually just the day of the surgery, perhaps the first night. Patients will also be prescribed pain medication. But I very often experience with other hand surgeries that the hands don't hurt very much, even if the wound areas and everything are quite large. However, thanks to this pain therapy with the arm block, once the worst is over, it's very manageable.
What does the rehabilitation or healing process actually involve? And how long does it usually take until patients can move their hand and thumb completely normally again?
Well, that primarily depends a little bit on the specific nature of one's profession. So, someone who really has to exert themselves physically will naturally need a little bit more time than someone who works in an office. Yes, generally speaking, wound healing always requires a period of 2 weeks. Then the sutures are removed. The area will then be immobilized for a period of 2 weeks, during which time the splint can occasionally be removed at home to allow for some cooling and also to carry out some initial finger movements that the patient will be instructed on, very simple ones, like a pincer grip and similar actions. That's where one begins. Typically, 2 weeks after stitch removal, a prescription is given for occupational therapy exercises. If no occupational therapist is available locally, then a physical therapist will specifically work on the hand, painkillers, and it's generally said that the hand's full function is restored after about 6 weeks.
What kind of feedback do you usually receive? And how satisfied are your patients long-term with a saddle joint prosthesis?
It's significantly better now. That wasn't quite the situation in earlier times because, regrettably, the prosthetic implants would become loose far too quickly, and they also had a pronounced tendency to dislocate. And that, naturally, was not a very pleasant or desirable outcome for the patients. By now, the prostheses are already in their fifth generation, and this new generation is now gradually establishing itself, so that people are realizing, yes, they function well, they don't dislocate easily, and they don't loosen as quickly. You can tell the patient that with their prosthesis, there's a 90% chance that it will still be functional in 10 years, and that's a very good outlook for the patients.
Are there any documented proofs or perhaps even comprehensive studies regarding the overall success rates or any of the possible complications that might arise?
Yes, those studies do exist, but they simply haven't been in use for a very long time yet, because this fifth generation hasn't really established itself widely. There are, however, many studies on the older prostheses, which have clearly shown the numerous complications. For this particular new prosthesis variant, there are in fact only a handful of these 10-year studies available, but such instances are truly very rare, and the vast majority of them are merely a few years old. So, we cannot yet report on such a vast amount of knowledge as, for example, with knee or hip prostheses. However, the investigations that are currently ongoing clearly demonstrate that these prostheses are considerably better for the patients. And the major advantage of this prosthesis is that the length of the thumb is reconstructed. And the length of the thumb is a critically important factor for its overall strength. And if the thumb loses even more length through other surgical procedures, even more strength is lost. So while patients may no longer experience as much pain when they want to open a bottle or turn a window crank, they cannot exert their strength as effectively as would be desirable, and that is precisely what the prosthesis can achieve.
Thank you very much, Dr. Dina, for the information you provided. This has been the Specialist Physician Talk, brought to you by Primo Medico, which is the premier choice for medical specialists and expert physicians. Thank you very much for taking the time out of your day to listen to our program. For more comprehensive and detailed information concerning the topic of medical specialists, please visit us online at primomedico.com. Join us again next time when we return with our popular segment, which is called Medicine for Your Ears.